Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome everyone to your local delivery of Owl Post. I am one of your hosts here, Matthew Rushing, Master Wizard, and with me, a Master Witch. Is that a thing?
I don't know. Why not?
Anyway, I can't remember all those things that Dumbledore is, but it's great to have you here, Drea.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here. This is probably one of my favorite chapters.
Oh, excellent. I'm so excited. Well, we're diving into the letters from no one. And I forgot that this was the chapter name. Like, that's something that jumped out to me. And it's a funny chapter name that, like, because nobody ever opens the letter to know who it's from. So they're just letters from, well no one.
No, they open the letter. Uncle Vern opens the letter. But you never, as the reader, know who it's from.
That's true.
So for our sake, we still have no idea who they're from. And Harry's perspective makes him think he should not be getting letters from anybody.
Well, I have to say right off the bat, I love this chapter because this is the one where Aunt Petunia is making his clothes that she's dying.
It smells so
And bad. I love that Harry looks in the bowl and he goes, oh, I didn't realize it all had to be so wet. and that statement lets you know everything you need to know about Harry and his sense of humor. Which he is sarcastic and very dry. And that, I mean, that's the one thing that I have to say about the films. Daniel Radcliffe pulled off that attitude and that humor perfectly. And yeah, this encapsulated everything about his humor, and I love it.
It was really funny. And I like how no one is happy with how those clothes smell in this chapter. No one is happy that they smell horrible.
And why is she dyeing them like gray? Like, what is he, a prison
convict? No, I got the impression that they have to like wear school uniforms, and that the public school, they only have to be a specific like color. So they have to be like a gray top and pants, but they don't have to be like a specific pair of pants or shirt. And so she just took like old clothes of Dudley's and is dyeing them so that they fit the like gray perspective versus when they went out and bought clothes for Dudley. You know, he got this like weird sound of like, I always pictured like a jockey, like a big fat marshmallow jockey on a horse.
Yes.
Oh gosh. Like,
that's what I, or an Oompa Loompa who's like a little bit too tall. And it looks like a pig in a wig, like all of that. Like that's the visual that she gave me.
That is so true. That is so true. Oh gosh, I can completely see that. Who walks around with a stick and hits people?
Which is why I thought jockey, because they have the little whip thing. Yes, yes,
yes. They had the riding crop.
Yes, that.
Yes, exactly.
Oh gosh,
it's so true. No, it is a fun chapter in the sense that it's doing a lot of interesting setup. And this the big thing obviously is that the letters are finally getting sent to Harry. And I have one interesting thing, which is if I'm correct, in the movie the wax seal is red.
And
it's
it doesn't have
in the book.
Yeah,
it's
and
purple.
It's not an actual crest. It's just like the what you think of when you buy at like the gift shop where you like press the silver thing into the hot wax. It's just like an H with like the I can't think of the word right now. The like vintage halo around it. But that's I think in the movie that's all that is. It's just like an H.
Right, right. Whereas in the book here, it's the crest of Hogwarts with the badger and the lion and the eagle and the snake. I always like to think of it as a honey badger because that just makes, you know, them so much more badass.
Yes, I love it.
The other thing that was fascinating here is the way in which the letter says the cupboard under the stairs. And as we were talking about in our previous episode, I think this is where the fear really takes hold of both of them. And Mr. and Mrs. Dursley realize that people are watching them and they didn't know it.
Well, they think people are watching
them. In the way that... Well, yes, but obviously it's happening because they know that Harry lives in the cupboard under the stairs, and it just freaks them out. And I really, really like that, that it's almost like their fears have been kind of rewarded because everything that they were scared of is kind of actually happening to them. And it kind of comes back to bite them.
Oh, yeah, it does.
And I love it.
Sure does. And it's another time that they really are talking about fear and all the crazy stuff that he goes through because he's afraid to open that letter. Where honestly, if he had just answered the letter like Aunt Petunia did, had suggested, where she was like, just respond and say no, like decline the invitation or whatever. While I don't know that it would have changed the outcome, I think they would have had greater odds of it changing the outcome. And they would have been more likely to not have the next chapter happen to them. And I don't think they would have driven all around the countryside.
That's a really good question. If they had responded, would and said, no, thank you, but thank you. If that they would have accepted that. And I get the feeling like it. Dumbledore would have showed up and been like, yeah, no, this boy has had his name for this school ever since he was born, as we hear from Hagrid in the next chapter. So, yeah.
But I think right. It would have been a less assertive next chapter. Yes, I think they would have just politely...
You probably wouldn't have sent Hagrid. You might have just sent, you know, McGonagall.
Yeah, or they might have just sent another letter saying, like, this, you can't decline this. Like, here's what happens. And then, I mean, I don't know. Their fear made them, like, absolutely insane. It was just the craziest response to this letter I've ever seen in my entire life. And you would think after they started sending multiples to the house that he would have realized you can't just throw in the trash can.
Well, and not only that, but I think one of the things that you pick up here is that the letter that Dumbledore left, you get a sense of what was in that letter that they have been trying to keep from happening for a very long time.
See, I didn't get that from this chapter. I got that from the next chapter. And okay. I think that chapter 3 and chapter 4 go a lot, really, really hand in hand in this particular situation. Because mm-hmm. This sort of sets up their overreaction to the letter. And then the next one sort of shows you what the consequences of that are. But I do think that I think it was a good depiction of how fear can lead us to do just like the most crazy things. Even though you mm-hmm. lose like all sense of ration and all sense of like sort of touch with the real world. And, you know, she made a point of mentioning like he took time off work to sort of lose his mind over this. And that sort of thing. I really liked the depiction of how they ended up in that like weird lighthouse shack thing on the island. It makes a lot more sense in the book than it does in the movie when they just magically find this place. And you have no idea what he's trying to do.
Uncle Vernon completely loses his S in this chapter. I mean, he does go bat crap crazy. And He just cannot handle the idea that
this is real.
Right. Exactly. And what's so interesting is the way in which they try to fend it off. I mean, not just trying to keep the letters from coming. And the other thing that really just stuck out to me that was so interesting is the way that they try to alleviate the situation at the house. And it's not just the letters that they are trying to keep from coming. But it's also that this is where they actually give Harry his bedroom.
Right. They actually see it happen, unlike in the movie.
And I think that's really fascinating. Right. Whereas, yeah, in the movie, he has a bedroom in the second movie. And you never find out why, really. But here, it's very explicit that they realize they're being watched. We need to start treating this boy more like our boy and not like our house elf. So let's give him a room. Dudley's second bedroom.
It was almost like, again, it was an appearances thing. Like they didn't think it was the right thing to do to give Harry the room, but they thought for appearances' sake, if someone was watching them, that they needed to now do this because they were worried, you know, something was going to happen or someone was going to think poorly of them, but not because they actually thought it was the right thing to do.
And I really like that because it continues to build in them this thing that, again, we're going to see completely mirrored oppositely with the Weasleys. Who are they will do the right thing even if it hurts them. Except for Mr. Weasley, who loves to keep his muggle things and enchant them. But I will let that go. That's harmless.
Unlike the one, you know, Weasley kid who has a moment, a period of self-discovery, yeah, we can call it.
He has his...
He's very...
I know what's right, you don't. You should just follow me because I'm making something of myself. You're not.
He has a very human... It's a very human thing. Like, he has this moment where he totally makes a mistake and has to live with it. But we'll get to that.
Well, and the other thing that was interesting here is that, you know, she sets up this little bit with Dudley that I thought was fascinating. And there's this moment where they get all of these letters to them on Saturday. They're coming in the eggs. They're hidden inside
that
eggs.
That made me laugh so hard. I forgot about that. Yeah, and that was my favorite one.
Which is
one.
Wonderful. That was actually filmed for the movie. They didn't actually... It might be in the extended cut. I can't remember. But they're at least it's a deleted scene. But Dudley asks Harry, he says, "Who on earth wants to talk to you this badly?" Dudley asked Harry in amazement. And it's the first time in the series, and it's very early, and I totally forgot about this, that Dudley looks at Harry as something other than just something to step on. It's the first moment where Dudley treats Harry like a human being.
He addresses him.
It's interesting. It'll continue happening throughout the series, but this is the first time, and I thought it was so interesting that it's in chapter 3 that there's a moment that Dudley is starting to have some inkling that Harry is more than just the thing that he steps on every day.
My favorite part of that, though, is when Harry is trying to figure out who wants to talk to Harry, and he's like, "I don't even have a library card, so like no one's sending me a bill for overdue books." Like, that just cracked me up. I actually kind of started laughing to myself at that one. Because, I mean, what a place to go. Like, not only do I not have friends or family, but, like, the library is not even looking for me. Like,
well, and I love that, you know, they keep kind of, they finally leave the house.
Yeah.
And they keep traveling from place to place. And they end up at this, like, janky hotel. And they actually get a letter delivered to them there. For Mr. Harry Potter, room 17. And it's just, it's our first delivery of Owl Post, actually. So I think that's pretty wonderful as well, our namesake. You're absolutely right that the way that she sets this up in the book makes so much more sense than it does in the movie to end up where they end up, which is, again, you can see that Uncle Vernon's been driven just completely mental so that he will do anything, which is to, in the middle of a storm, travel out to an outcropping of rocks that a shack is built on and think that that's going to be the place that will keep
him safe. With only rations,
from the letters.
Nothing to start a fire or anything like that. Yeah, it was crazy. It was just crazy. And I think the actual, like, owl post is not something that she ever really explains how that works. Like, how do you honestly know where someone is at all times? Like, how does the owl find you, to be perfectly honest? And it's one of those things that I think I love, and I love that she never explained it. So that's why, part of why this is my favorite, because of the changing location on the letter from the cupboard to the smallest bedroom to the weird hotel. I don't even remember what it was called, but like the roadway inn or whatever, like all of it just made me smile.
I know how they do it. It's the underage wizard Trace that's still on you until but you become when you're a not full underage. Age wizard.
You can send it to anybody but, and have a general idea where they are, but that's it.
Well, no, that's true. I'm thinking specifically of Harry. They would always know where he is until because they could trace him as an underage wizard. But you're right. Owls seem to be able to find people wherever. And I think that is one of those wonderfully magical things that she's never explained. And she just
leave it like that.
Yeah, there's those things in Star Wars that you would just never want to have explained to you. And you can just wonder about them and it just makes it fun.
You get that, Rowling? Don't go all midi-chlorians on us.
Well, that's
sorry, I had to put my little jab in there.
So I can talk about why that's important, but anyway. Was there anything about this chapter, you know, I'm trying to think for me, but was there anything for you that jumped out that you didn't remember or just kind of caught you off guard again?
I feel a little bit like a broken record because I keep going back to the differences between what I saw in the movie and in the book. But I think how descriptive she was with what the letter looked like. And we talked about it a little bit earlier with the seal versus the seal in the movie. But she's so descriptive in the weight of the paper and the size of the paper and that the paper inside the envelope is made of the same material as the envelope. And it's written in this like emerald green ink. Like that to me just painted such a picture of what I could imagine this actual letter looked like. And I think for me, that just stood out a lot in this chapter. And then thinking of how many of them kept coming, it was just sort of made a very visually beautiful idea of what this letter should look like. And then even having the fonts in the book change with how the letter is addressed, you know, the address is in a different font in the book than the rest of the writing, which was also really interesting and an interesting sort of trick that they did. That to me sort of stood out the most in this chapter.
I like that you point that out because I think that anyone who is worth their salt as a fantasy writer is somebody who does that. You know, Tolkien is very good about his descriptions. He makes you feel like you're there. You can get lost in his descriptions. And it's good because you're creating a world which you don't know. And so I've noticed that, like you said, every time Harry has something magical happen to him, especially in this book, she does get much more descriptive about what it looks like, what it's going on. And it adds to this sense of heightened reality that the wizarding world, which Harry doesn't know anything about yet, has. Like, it already feels special because everything's slightly different. You know, people wear different clothes. We've already had that described in the first couple chapters to us. You know, the way they send letters is very different. They send it on a parchment with seals and wonderful descriptively cursived fonts, you know, and that kind of thing. They know exactly where you live, whether it's under the cupboard, the smallest bedroom, or in a bad hotel. You know, so it's really a perfect way to help continue to bring the audience into a brand new world that she's going to lay out for you in a few chapters, especially the moment you get to Diagon Alley and everything's different.
I would be interested. So something that stood out to me so far is that she tends to use a few colors to describe the wizarding world versus the muggle world. She likes emerald green and deep purple and red. She picks these really deep, saturated, almost royal colors for the wizarding world. And then when she describes the non-wizarding world, it's either really bright colors like the orange pantaloons or she'll talk about, you know, like the white brick fence. So she uses these really, really different colors when she talks about the two different worlds. So I'll be interested to see if as I read through, as we actually go into the next parts and we go into the wizarding world, if that keeps up or if she sort of like backs away from that a little bit as we go through. But that keeps sort of jumping out. That there's specific colors associated with her things that are, you know, magical.
Yeah, it's the colors of the wizarding world are more regal. Yeah. they give you a sense of history and longevity and
strength.
Strength than you would get. Yeah, very much so. So no, I think that's an interesting thing to point out, the differences between the two, because, you know, the normal world, the Muggle world, seems kind of so transient in comparison. And so
I almost imagine one being like in color and the other one in black and white, like if you were to do the old fashioned movie thing to it, or the Instagram filter for you millennials that aren't so hip on the old movies.
Yeah, sepia tone. I was saying earlier, and this is something that struck me as the beginning of it, but, you know, Petunia and Vernon are having this argument about everything in these letters, and he says, you know, didn't we swear to you know, when we took him in, we were going to stamp out this dangerous nonsense? And that this is kind of that beginning that they have an awareness from what they were told about Harry from the letter, who he's going to be and what he could be and what is going to happen, and that they took the opinion of, no, we're not going to have that happen. We'll do everything we can to stop it. And I think that was really intriguing to me, because it is something that slowly simmers throughout all the books and doesn't really get answered at all till the very end. You know, that is not a question that you fully get realized until book 7. Exactly what they knew, why they knew it, and what they did, and why they did it, especially Aunt Petunia. And so it's interesting to me that there is the beginning of that in this chapter and then the next few chapters, but it's not something that really gets picked up until, you know, a few books later, I think in 5, when they're really worried about Harry staying there. Uncle Vernon's really not happy with him staying there because, you know, Voldemort's back and all.
You've ruined it.
I know. Dang it. So, yeah, I thought, to me, that's the thing that stood out to me the most, was starting that story, but realizing, you know, from what I know now, it's not going to end. I'm not going to get any resolution to that anytime soon. It just kind of slowly simmers under the surface.
Well, and I think that's another way that she sort of makes her stories accessible. We talked about in the last episode that everyone has this sort of like black sheep feeling. At some point in your life, you know, you're the odd man out. And I think it's interesting, this idea that they believed they could change something about Harry that is so fundamental in him that he doesn't even know that it exists or that it's there. So I think that that also speaks to a lot of different groups, a lot of different people, that, you know, there's a lot to us fundamentally that can't be changed, even if someone tries to squash it out of you or stomp it out of you. And so I think that was really an interesting little tidbit she put in there. And she's talking about, you know, squashing out the wizard part of him, but, oh, sorry, spoilers. It's about a wizard, guys.
What? What?
You, I know, I just ruined the next like 6 pages of the book for you.
Dang it.
But I thought it was an interesting way to do that, you know, because I think that that's happened to a lot of people too, and that it's something that is relatable even if you haven't personally experienced it. The idea that, you know, your family or your aunt or uncle or whoever wants you to be something you're not, or doesn't want you to be something you are. So that was so interesting. And it was such a small little tiny part of the book, but it really resonates.
It is a very, I think, wonderful and wonderfully subtle part of the story. And I think she does such a good job with that. And it's important to do that because, you know, too many stories make their points too loudly, and that takes away from the impact, I think, that they have. And by doing it in this way, I think she aligns herself much more with like a Chronicles of Narnia, where it's a part of, it's just ingrained in the story. It just is. It's, you know, the message. She does the same thing. It's just the DNA of her story. And it's not like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, hey, you know, let me have the character shout it really loud for you, you know, that kind of thing. Although Harry will shout a lot in book five.
He shouts in this one, too. He yells at Uncle Vernon, which I was surprised about because he already has a lot of spunk in him in this first book. And they don't do that doesn't translate to the screen nearly as much as it did in the book.
It never does. No, you're right. Absolutely not. I think that there's a lot about the characters that doesn't quite make it to the screen. And I think that's going to be something to continue to talk about because the character for me that's the most changed from book to movie is Ron. And it's unfortunate because Ron is a very important character to the story, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. So,
sorry, I'm reeling it back in, guys. No.
Yeah, just reel it back in, you know, like a fish. I love the way in which, too, this chapter leaves you on the edge of your seat because it legitimately ends with somebody banging at the door. And so she does have you do that thing where you're like, well, I guess I got to turn the page and see what happens because I want to know now.
And she has something that she'll continue through the books that I never noticed before, but she talks about Dudley's arm off the couch. She has this weird thing with like body parts. Like she has them like describes how they're laying. She describes a lot of like people's positions. The arms off the couch. That will come back again in seven. But she...
So another Harry Potter book that'll come back.
But so she talks about the position of people's bodies. So in the next book, that'll be a big part of things and things like that. She talks a lot about people's body positions, which I never really noticed until I started rereading this one. And I was like, oh, that's weird.
That's really interesting. I'll have to look for that now to see what I can find as we're reading through. So
colors and body parts, people.
I'm excited to hear from the listeners if they are randomly getting owl post. That's not this podcast, but just showing up in their chimneys and in eggs. How do you make that happen if you can't just transfigure an egg? I don't know.
Yeah, if you can get on that and let us know, that would be great.
It would be awesome. So if you do, hit us up on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. Of course, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We're on iTunes, and we love to actually thank a few people who have given us some wonderful reviews on iTunes. Really appreciate this so far. We've got 4 great reviews. We've got one from Sean Dorman. It says, if you love Harry Potter, this is for you. 5 stars. Thank you so much. Dr. Sci-Fi said, Mail's here. 5 stars. Kessel Junkie says, yes, a quality Potter podcast. 5 stars. And Riddell 24 said, we'll get you excited again. 5 stars. Well, thank you so much, all of you, for doing that. We really appreciate our friends from the Nerd Party community giving us those reviews. And we ask you to join them. Hit us up with some star ratings and reviews there on iTunes and just help the show grow, help more people find it. It means a lot to us and as we try to bring you just fun, quality Harry Potter entertainment. And we want to hear from you. So go over to thenerdparty.com/contact and you could send us an email. We'll get that email. That's great. If you have any questions for us about certain chapters, you know, thoughts about what we said on certain chapters, let us know. We'd love to hear that. Again, you can also reach us on Facebook for that, too. So anywhere on social media, just hit us up and let us know what you're thinking, because we've gotten some nice compliments already, Dre. I was actually grinning ear to ear from some of the things people said on Twitter to us. And so thank you so much to everybody who's reached out that way. And if people want to continue to do that, where can they find you, Drea?
I am at PCF Chick on Twitter and at Drea Kaufman, COFFMAN, on Instagram.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on Instagram at MRushing. I'm on the Trek FM network doing a couple of shows. I do The Orb there with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. And I'm also on our General Geek Show, the 602 Club. We're talking everything in geekdom that isn't Star Trek, because we have a whole other 12, 15, 20 shows devoted to Star Trek on that network. We're talking about everything else, all the fandoms you love. And of course, you can also find Star Wars the 602 Club Collection on iTunes as well. And don't forget, we've got Aggressive Negotiations here on the Nerd Party with me and John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week for you. Just something fun, esoteric, weird, funny, serious, everything in between that we can fit into that show. So, well, thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.